There were times I was lost, dark had fear, couldn't see through the rain. In the end it was clear, hit the fan. I was more than one man who was there to lend a hand. Together we'd stand, always at my back, my guardian soldier. Team pulled together, united we conquer. Blessed is he who in the name of charity carry me when I'm weak, straight through the valley of darkness, pitch blackness, the heartless. Regardless, fear couldn't part us, thick and thin, there by my side. At times we collide, but in the end we ride. And thin, there by my side. At times we collide, but in the end we ride. We ride, 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 ride.
Are you my brothers, keep on holding strong. United we stand, divided we fall. Together we belong. I am my brothers, keep on holding strong. United we stand, divided we fall. Together we belong. I am my brothers.
Welcome, Moto fans, to episode 19 of the Mental for Moto podcast. I'm your host, Pete Wolfe. Before we sink our teeth into this episode, I'd like to thank our partners here at Mental for Moto: Death Grip Products, SPMX Suspension and Engine Performance, Graphics by Aqua, Shred Bike Care, Wolf Building Compliance, and Works Racing. And we've also got three new partners who I'm stoked to have aboard: Iro, Five Gloves, and Bolt Everywhere Premium Racewear. Now, I just picked up several boxes of our 2024 motocross calendars from the printers, and they look sick. To grab one for yourself, visit us at www.mentalformoto.com and place your order now via our online shop. The express purpose of these calendars is to raise money for a bunch of privateer races for their 2024 efforts. And when you fill in the order form, you'll get to nominate one of the 20 riders on the Mental for Moto Rider Support Program who you'd like to help out. And if it's too hard to choose, there is a share the love option as well. So if you tick that box, the proceeds of your purchase will be distributed amongst all of the riders on the program equally. But the fun doesn't end there. For every calendar that you order, you'll get one entry into the prize draw to win a bunch of amazing prizes. The prize pool includes things like an Iro Striker helmet worth $600, a pair of five MXF race gloves, their newest design which is getting absolutely rave reviews, two pairs of Works Racing goggles complete with the Works Racing roll-off system, as well as two pairs of the Death Grip Reaper gloves as worn by up-and-coming Supercross rider Memphis Trevena throughout this year's Australian Supercross Championship. Now, if that isn't worth getting a calendar for, I don't know what is. All right, let's get to our guest for this episode, Jeremy Waters, who is one of the newly announced riders on the Mental for Moto Rider Support Program for 2024. This year, Jeremy had his first taste of racing at a professional level, entering one round of the Pro-MX Championship in Maitland and two rounds of the Australian Supercross Championship in Adelaide and Newcastle, which is where I first met him in person. He'll be racing the 2024 season in the MX1 class and be doing all of the Pro-MX rounds as well as all of the Australian Supercross Championship rounds. Chatting to Jeremy in the pits at Newcastle, I couldn't help but like this dude. He's the true definition of a privateer. And you only need to chat to him for about 2 minutes to realise that more than anything else, he's just a guy that loves to race his dirt bike. Jeremy Waters, welcome to the podcast, mate. How are you going?
Yeah, good. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, that's good. Before we get started, just tell me a little bit about yourself.
Name Jeremy Waters. I'm 19 years old and I'm from Dalgong, New South Wales.
Ah, nice. No relation to Todd Waters?
No, unfortunately not.
Well, you're obviously one of the riders on the 2024 Mental for Moto Rider Support Program. So, let's get into it and find out a little bit about yourself. How'd you get into to motocross? How'd you get started?
My dad raced when he was younger and then sort of life got in the way and he had to give it up and had kids and sort of like everyone else, sort of took to it. Didn't really ever want to do anything else.
Yeah, so he got you a bike when you were young?
Yeah, I think I was three maybe. Yeah, yeah, it would have been three.
Pee-wee, I'm tipping?
Yeah. Yeah, the old Pee-wee 50, like, I think it's the only way you can start.
Yeah. So where did he race around, sort of New South Wales? Was he in the same area where you are now?
No, he raced down on the Central Coast, like around lakes and Cessnock, down that way.
Yeah, so how long did you ride for before you actually got into racing?
Might have been 6 months.
Oh, yeah, so you started really, really young.
Yeah, sort of started as young as you could.
Yeah, is there a pretty strong club scene where you are?
Yes and no. Not right where I am, within an hour and a half, 2 hours there is, so close enough.
Yeah, so you have to travel around a bit to get to the races?
Yeah, got to travel a bit. I like the travelling, so it doesn't really bother me.
Yeah, so how did your junior career go?
Not very good. Oh, not bad, but I had an injury and then sort of just, I don't know if I was scared, but it just took me a while to get my feet back under me with it.
What sort of injury did you have? How old were you?
Oh, I might have been 12 or 13 and I did my tib-fib near my leg and it sort of just scared me a bit, I guess.
How'd you manage that?
Big set of sand rollers at a track we have out here and bike started swapping and then just spat me off.
That's all she wrote.
Yeah, and from there I was just a passenger. There wasn't much I could do.
What sort of recovery did you have? Was it an 8 to 12 week sort of thing, or did it go for longer? Or
I think it was sort of just your normal 8 to 12 weeks, and then I probably was a bit of a baby about it, being younger.
Is that the first time you broke bones?
Yeah.
It's always a big deal.
So that was the first time I'd done it.
Like, how did that work against you when you were coming back? Was it just something that was in your head when you were trying to pick it back up?
I don't know. It just sort of took away my edge for a little bit.
Yeah.
Pretty much all the way up until I got onto big bikes. I never really gelled much with an 80 or stuff like that.
But you obviously kept going, though. You were obviously passionate about it and still motivated to keep racing.
Yeah, I wouldn't trade it for anything. I still love it to this day.
So that begs the question then, why do you ride? Like, what does motocross do for you?
That's the age-old question, and I don't really know how to answer it. I just couldn't really imagine myself doing anything else.
Yeah. I think that's an old cliche. It's not what you can live with. It's what can't you live without?
Yeah, I've contemplated many a time just maybe I'll pull the pin and down buy a four-wheel drive and go camp each weekend and that, but I have about a week or two off the bike and kind of always want to go back. So
do you have any hobbies outside of motocross, or is that your driving passion?
It's pretty much my driving passion at the moment.
Well, let's have a chat then about the 2023 motocross and supercross seasons. We'll start with motocross first. Did you do a couple of the Pro MX rounds this year?
I tried qualifying for Maitland.
Yes.
And I sort of just got in my own head with being there.
Yep.
Like, it was my first, besides like East Coast or state titles, it was my first big race.
Yep.
And I didn't qualify. I wasn't far off the pace, and I turned up on a stock bike, like, and in the 250 class, it's pretty hard to try and ride a stock bike. Like, I was still just running pump fuel, everything. I had nothing really done with the bike. I had suspension, that was it.
Yeah, so you were racing MX2.
Yeah, I was then, and then I got a 450 to practice on and kind of just started liking the 450 more.
So what was that whole experience at Maitland like? What was the track like and the atmosphere, and how big of a step was it from what you'd done previously?
It was almost too big of a step, I think.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I knew that was where I wanted to be. So trying to do it, or like, you want to do it. And the track was awesome. It was a lot deeper in that than what I had ridden before, and just formed up rougher in that. But I actually liked it, so it was all right.
So in the lead up to Maitland then, what did you do to prepare as far as regional races go, and like, what's your experience over the last few years leading up to wanting to turn pro?
Pretty much just your local races and that I did, and I was doing pretty well at them. Pretty much wasn't not really ever off the podium around the local races and that, so then I sort of started doing like all the East Coast rounds and stuff like that, and I was sort of running top 10 in them. And we didn't have a state titles, and I just thought, you know what, why not? Like, I can sit here bobbing around local races my whole life, or make the step and go for it and see what happens.
Yeah, see how you go.
Yeah, at the end of the day, I make money, and I was fit enough to turn up, and I'm happy enough to turn up, so I'm easy.
Yeah, so how did you go with the, obviously, the longer races and the format? Did you find that a struggle at all, like fitness-wise and stamina-wise, or was that sort of something pretty easy to acclimate yourself to?
I struggled a lot with arm pump for the first sort of half of the year, and then I started, in the lead-up to Maitland, started training in that a lot more, and I was pretty good. I felt strong and healthy at Maitland, and yeah, I was happy.
So it wasn't like a fitness thing. It was just like as far as qualifying goes.
I a lot of just turning up, like just first time.
Were you nervous?
Yeah, very, and it just caught me off guard.
Yeah, yeah.
Like even just the night before, you turn up and there's trucks everywhere, and I'm turning up in my little V-dub van. Like it's an experience in itself, but I'm glad I did it.
Yeah, massively. It's pretty sort of last minute, I think. You know, even for us media guys, it's pretty last minute. You turn up, there's shit going down everywhere. Like there's people trying to find parks and find their way around and figure out what's going on. I can only imagine that it must be pretty similar for you guys as riders, especially the privateers, because you guys tend to get let in last and park furthest away and, all that sort of stuff.
There's 50 vans going left, right, and centre. You don't know where you're meant to park, what's meant to happen.
Yeah.
Even everything down to just getting going to sign on was an experience in itself compared to local races or East Coast.
Yeah. So did you get a lot of information in the lead up as to where you had to go and when you had to be there, or were you sort of flying blind?
They gave a fair bit of information, but I probably should have looked into it a bit more than I did.
Yeah.
I was just excited to go ride my bike at a pro event, so I didn't really look into it as much as I should. But once you get there and you take a deep breath and that, it's all pretty self-explanatory on what to do.
Yeah. Have you been to watch nationals before, like in person?
No, so that was my first ever pro race I had been to.
That's incredible.
And I turned up with a bike.
Nah, that's awesome. So, that's definitely a massive experience for sure.
Yeah, I got thrown into the deep end pretty quickly.
Did you follow the rest of the Promex Championship sort of before and after Maitland then?
Like watching it?
Yeah, watching it, yep.
Yeah, I watched it all leading up to Maitland, and then I watched it after Maitland and that, and yeah, I pretty much watched whatever racing's on TV.
And what did you think about the rest of the championship as far as the tracks go, the format?
I wish I was there for it, and I'm looking forward to this year making it to All Around. And yeah, I think they did fairly well. You can always wish that there was a couple more rounds in New South Wales, but I think that they were all pretty even across the states between all of the rounds.
Yeah, what do you think about the talk of possibly going to back to WA in the coming years? I don't think it'll be next year. Looking at the calendar, I think they've released everything but one round now. But what do you think about going to WA and possibly even Tasmania in the future? Do you reckon that's doable for the privateers?
Doable, yes. In the privateers' best interest, maybe not. Like, I know myself and a lot of the other privateers will go pretty much anywhere just to race our bike. If it's the best decision for us, I don't really know. But in the same thing, you can say that there's privateers over at WA and down in Tasmania that don't get it. They have to come all the way to us. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I'll be out of it. I'm easy.
I was listening to a conversation the other day sort of from people that are involved in that, and they were saying how strong the West Coast scene is, but how few of those riders actually come over to race Pro-MX because it is primarily all based on the East Coast. So the Pro-MX Championship is missing out on some of these really top-tier riders because it's the same for them. Like, they're all based in the West Coast, and the only way to get to the Pro-MX is to travel.
Yeah, well, I could see how you could see how much of a pain it'd be for them, and it'd be good to have them guys over here racing, fill some more gates and try and get more people to the races. Yeah. I think it'll work out in everyone's favour pretty much.
Yeah, in the end, yeah. I've driven across the Nullarbor and over to the west before. It's a bloody long way, though. I can only imagine what it'd be like for, you know, the guys up in Queensland and New South Wales to have to travel across. It's definitely going to be a mission, you know.
Yeah, like I said before, I personally love the travelling, and
yep.
I always heard about the older generation and that saying how they used to drive across the Nullarbor to go race bikes and that, and it kind of excites me.
Oh, that's cool.
We did a lot of travelling growing up, so like it was 14 hours for me to get to, probably would have been more than 14 hours for me to get to Adelaide, and I did that. That was a boring drive.
Yeah.
There wasn't much.
Yeah. So who comes with you? How do you put it all together and make it all work?
I got my dad who comes with me, and I got my V-dub van, and that's about it.
That's it?
Yeah.
So you guys just share the driving?
Yeah, just share the driving and throw a bike in the back and can't really go wrong.
No, that's the way to do it. That's definitely privateer life. And having met you for the first time at the Newcastle Supercross, yeah, I can definitely vouch that you're on Privateer Island. You were doing it all on your own there.
Well, at Newcastle, Dad couldn't make it, and I had one of my mates that I've known for years, and I messaged him about 3 days before it, and I said, "Do you want to swing spinners?" He's like, "Yeah, why not?"
It'd be pretty hard to do without any sort of support. I can imagine it'd have to make it easier, you know, having someone there with you.
Oh, even just in the back. Yeah, just everything.
Yep.
Like, even if it's just down to them just grabbing you something out of the fridge when you pull in from practice, like, it makes everything easier.
Yeah, having someone to talk to just to calm the nerves.
Yeah, you know, I'd drive myself crazy if I was on my own.
I could definitely relate to that.
Saying that, I didn't really talk to him too much before all of the practices and the heat races. I just put my earphones in and sort of listen to some music.
Yeah, you go into the zone a little bit.
Yeah, try and shut everything else out.
I sort of touched on it before. Do you find yourself getting like really nervous, or do you sort of just focus? What do you do in the lead up to the race? Are you trying to visualize the race, or do you just try to shut everything out so you're not thinking too much?
I normally stress for about 20 minutes really hard, and then just sort of, you know, right, it's what you wanted to do. You wanted to be here. Stop stressing about it. It's fun. We'll get the race dirt bikes.
Yeah, that's it.
Like at the end of the day, I think so many people stress out about it.
Yeah.
Too much when at the end of the day you're only racing dirt bikes.
Yeah, you're not saving lives in the big picture. It's
at the end of the day, what else is there to do? Go to the pub? I know for a fact that I would not want to be at the pub. Like, so yeah.
No, definitely living the moto life. All right. We hope you're enjoying the show. It's time to take a quick break to say a few words on behalf of our awesome sponsors. So keep your ear holes open and your finger away from that fast forward button. And most importantly, support the sponsors that support Mental for Moto. Death Grip Products. Nearly all motocross riders experience arm pump, some of us more than others. As well as exercise and a good diet, one of the things that's really helped me is wearing the right gloves. The Death Grip Reaper glove is a lightweight glove that is designed to maximize comfort and feel. And the non-slip logo on the palm and fingertips reduces the effort that it takes to stay connected to the controls. Death Grip Products is currently offering a whopping 35% off the Reaper glove for Mental for Moto listeners. To take advantage of this offer, click on the link below and use the promo code MENTAL23 and you can conquer your arm pump demons as well. Works Racing Goggles. It's been a horrible wet winter so far, but with the Works Racing roll-off system, you can ensure that you ride with clear vision every time you get on the track, regardless of how muddy it gets. A small, locally owned business, Works Racing Goggles offer premium performance at a fraction of the price of some of the big-name brands. To order yourself a pair of Works Racing Goggles today, simply follow the link below. Wolf Building Compliance and Fire Protection. Having a quality fire extinguisher in your trailer and workshop is one good way to make sure that your valuable dirt bikes don't accidentally go up in flames. Servicing the Greater Melbourne area, Wolf can help you out with all your fire protection needs. Visit wolfbc.net or click on the link below and use the contact form, and the guys at Wolf will be sure to look after you. SPMX Engine and Suspension Performance. There's one thing that the bikes ridden by the fastest riders in the world have in common, and it isn't always that they have the most horsepower, fanciest engine mods, or shiniest aftermarket exhaust systems. It's good suspension. Contrary to popular belief, though, having your suspension working correctly for your weight, speed, and preferred style of riding is no longer a luxury that is accessible only to the pros. As an average rider myself, I can attest what a difference getting your suspension tuned and serviced makes. So if you want to go faster, ride safer, and simply enjoy your riding more, book in with Steve at SPMX to get your suspension tuned and serviced. You'll be amazed just at what a difference it makes. Graphics by Aqua. If you want a lit kit, Graphics by Aqua have got you covered. Neon colors, metal flaking, holographics. Graphics by Aqua are taking jersey prints, graphics kits, and graphic design to the next level. Best of all, Graphics by Aqua is locally based and exclusively use premium quality local suppliers for their full range of products and services. They even do custom logo designs and work uniforms. To see some of their awesome work, check out the Graphics by Aqua Instagram page and give them a follow while you're there, or simply follow the link below to visit their website. Shred Bike Care. The concept behind Shred Bike Care is simple. A clean bike is a fast bike. And with a complete range of products, from bike wash and degreaser to chain lube and surface treatments, Shred can have your bike looking clean and shiny every time you hit the track. Australian owned and locally produced, the range of Shred products are fast acting, safe on all bike parts, biodegradable, and unlike most other generic cleaning products on the market, are entirely designed by bikers for bikers. To check out the full range on offer at Shred Bike Care, visit their website by clicking on the link below. Now let's get back to this episode. So about the Australian Supercross Championship then, you raced Adelaide and Newcastle. Tell me a little bit about that experience.
That was awesome. That was sort of, I was a bit calmer at them ones. Not sort of, even though it was still Supercross, just having the motocross under my belt and being at something like that sort of felt more like I was meant to be there.
Yes, yeah.
And yeah, I just had fun with it. I wasn't stressing at all.
So how did you prepare training-wise and riding Supercross-wise in the lead-up to Adelaide?
I really should have done more than I did. I was just riding Supercross each weekend or whenever I could get down there, which was pretty much every week, every Saturday or Sunday I'd go down and do my motos and lead, do some starts and that, and then head home, the three-hour drive back.
Yeah, so where was that?
That was down Singleton Way.
Yep.
And just tried running and that through the week like I normally do and was all right. Just trying, just the normal, try and stay fit and do the boxing and that when I can and, yeah.
And what do you think about the Adelaide track? It was obviously pretty small, so I can imagine it was not similar to what you'd been training on, given that most Supercross tracks are sort of more full-scale than Adelaide was. What did you think of the track? Yeah.
Adelaide, it was a lot tighter than what I'd ridden, and that caught me off guard a bit. I personally think a Supercross track should be bigger than that, but that's not up to the riders so much. So, but yeah, it was probably a bit tight, but Newcastle was good. Bloody slippery though.
Yeah, slippery, and it was a full scale, full size, full spec Supercross track. From the outside looking in, it definitely looked like it was pretty technical.
It was actually easier to ride than Adelaide.
Yeah, see, I wouldn't have guessed that.
No, it was easier to ride than Adelaide because you sort of had a bit more time to set up and get your wits about you and go, okay, this, you've got to do this and this and this gear. And where Adelaide, you didn't get a chance to breathe. You didn't, there was nothing.
And how do you go? But, obviously, it's a lot closer racing as far as like the physical distance between you and the other riders. How do you sort of cope with that, having primarily come from a motocross background?
Kind of. Got to man up a bit, I suppose. I was probably a bit timid towards everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
But I wasn't really going there with many expectations. I just wanted to go there and get my feet wet with it so I can get ready for next year and do it.
Yeah, see what it's like. So as far as motocross and supercross goes, you've obviously had a hell of a lot more motocross experience under your belt, but what comes easier to you?
I like to think I'm more of a technical rider, but I also... The Supercross doesn't come easy to me, so it's a bit of both. I definitely rather than motocross, but I think that's just because I've done it more. It'd be nice to get a couple more Supercross seasons under my belt and then see what I like more.
And so what sort of tracks do you like when it comes to motocross? Like what sort of surface do you like? Are you more of a sand rider or do you like the deep, muddy, you know, ruddy sort of tracks or hard pack tracks?
Either really ruddy tracks. I don't mind rut. I grew up riding sand.
Yep.
So sand's always sort of come very natural to me and I do like sand and loamy dirt. Just kind of depends what mood you're in, I suppose. But yeah, I'm not a big fan of just full hard pack myself, but that's just me.
Oh, I think everyone's sort of got their preference.
Yeah, I sort of like a nice in between loamy but still holds up a bit.
Yeah. You're obviously, like we said, you're working living the privateer life. How do you balance your work, your training? You know, how often do you ride midweek?
At the moment, I don't really get to ride midweek, which is a pain. I wish I could, but there's not really many places to ride out here midweek. Like we live in town. There's not many properties all that have tracks. I'm lucky enough that my boss used to race dirt bikes, so he's been pretty lenient with if I need a day off here to travel or whatever's going on, then sort of just make it work, I suppose.
So what do you do training for work?
I'm a fitter machinist. So, yeah, doing my Cert 3 in mechanical engineering.
Yeah, so makes it a little bit difficult to take time off. You obviously got a goal there.
Yeah, pretty bad for if there's a race. The day's coming off.
You got your priorities right. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, as much as the boss probably doesn't like it, I would pick racing any day of the week. But, yeah, I try and at the moment I'm trying just to go to the gym 3 days a week and ride.
Yep.
Once or twice on the weekends if I can get there. And, yeah, not much else to it.
Yeah. And how do you fund it all? Are your parents still helping you out, or you're doing it all off your own bat?
Pretty much solo at the moment.
Yeah.
Dad helps out here and there. If he comes to a race, they'll tank a fuel in, which helps more than a lot of people would know.
Yes, yeah.
And I think a lot of people get it on how expensive it actually is to get to some of these races.
Yeah, I got my first taste of that. I did, I think, 5 or 6 of the Pro-MX rounds this year and all of the Supercross as a quote, professional media guy. But it's,
yeah,
you know, from the media perspective, it's very much like living the privateer life. You know, you're there a lot of the time because you love it. You know, I got a taste of how expensive it can be. And then on top of that, obviously, as riders, you've got all the bike stuff to go on top of that, all the mechanical stuff, the maintenance. There's even more expenses than what I had. So, you know, to do that 12 times a year, it definitely adds up. And then, you know, you've got all your training and everything that you have to put on top of that as well.
Yeah, and then, yeah, add on just your local races and that you want to do when there's not Pro-MX on or something like that, and it all adds up. And yeah, I don't think a lot of people realize it.
No, 100%. I asked someone at one of the local tracks the other day. He was talking about pro motocross riders, and I said, what do you think that someone, you know, that's in the 10th to 20th overall position at a Pro-MX race, what do you think they're making for an event? And he said to me, he goes, oh, I don't know, it'd have to be 10 grand, wouldn't it?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Unless you're in the top 10, you are making nothing.
Yeah. I'm like, it's probably costing them 10 grand. But yeah, it's,
yeah.
I had to laugh, but I think that's what the perception is. Even, and this guy's like, he lives it. He rides every weekend. He watches it on TV. He obviously doesn't listen to a lot of podcasts and stuff because that often gets covered. But I think the perception is that a lot of you guys, you know, it's a sport that is on TV and it's on Channel 7 or SBS and it's professional sport. I think the perception is that you guys are making a lot of money, but yeah, it's...
I wish I could run 10th to 20th and make 10 grand a race. It'd be nice.
Yeah.
But no, especially in Australia, unless you're in the top 10, you're not making anything.
Yeah, I had a rider on that finished 10th for the first time at a pro national, and he made $75 out of the purse. So,
which I 100% disagree with personally. Like, if you look back to the late 90s, and that you could nearly make a living out of it running tent, you can't now.
Yeah, combined with sponsors and stuff, I think that's an interesting point you raise. I think the whole scene has changed. I would argue, and I don't know the facts and figures behind it all, but I anticipate that there is people making money off Pro-MX still, as far as the promoters and the event organisers. Otherwise, they wouldn't do it. Riders definitely aren't making money. And in the 90s, you sort of already touched on it. Riders in sort of the top 10 to top 20 were able to make a living combined, you know, with winnings and gear deals, because at that stage, before social media, a lot of the gear brands were actually paying riders, whereas now, you know, the guys in the 10th to 20th, they're lucky if they can get free gear, let alone discounted gear.
Yeah, well, I haven't heard much from people, but I don't think there's any, unless you're at least top 10, top 5, there's many gear deals that are giving out free gear. Like, you get your discount and stuff like that. Like, I have Fox. Fox helps me out hugely, but I'm not getting free gear. Like, I'm far from getting free gear. And, yeah, I think there's people making money on the back end of it that probably... I think a bit more needs to go to the riders myself, but
it's a dynamic though that it's going to be really hard to change, because there's guys like yourself and like a lot of the privateers I've had on the podcast, that one of them actually said to me, and it was you know, it still rings in my ears. He said, even if I was getting paid nothing, I'd still do it. And while that sort of attitude prevails, like for promoters or anyone that is making money out of the events, like why would you forego some of that when you've got riders that are willing to step up and ride for nothing? Because they love it, you know, and there's so many motocross riders out there that absolutely love and are passionate about the sport and will do it for nothing or next to nothing.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, I'm the same. I'm not making anything. Can I still turn up every weekend to the tracks and ride my bike? Like, but I don't think they should take advantage of that myself. I think there should be a bit more money put into the prize pool for people. Like, I don't know. I think when they sent me the regs and that for Newcastle, I think first place in MX1 was only maybe $2,000, maybe $3,000 or something. Like, it wasn't anything special, which I don't think is right, but.
Yeah, Supercross, I think, is a little bit of a different animal, especially this year. I think they're sort of trying to do the right thing, and it's trending in the right direction.
Yeah, I was very pleased to see the privateer program and all of that come in, try and put a bit more incentive out for people, make $1,000. Like, a few people who made $1,000, it would have helped them more than a lot of people know. But, yeah, I think the motocross needs to do something in that direction.
And, look, that's sort of one of the reasons I started the rider support program, is to shine a bit of a spotlight on you guys that are, you know, in the 10th to 20th, or even you know, trying to get into the top 20. My personal opinion is that I would love to see in the future that the guys in the 10th to 20th can at least cover all their costs, and that'll obviously make it easier for them to make a push to try get regularly in the 15 to 10 or even into the top 10. And I honestly think that anyone that's finishing in the top 10 should be able to make a living out of the sport. I mean, you're the top 10 at a given vocation out of everyone in the whole country. It's on TV. There's a lot of support. There's promotion. There's sponsors. And even if it's not possible now, I'd like to see and help get the sport to a place where it is possible.
Yeah, I think at least top 10, you should be able to make a living off it. Like, you look America and they're top 20 making a living off it.
Yeah.
Like, even further back, like, you look at that Jeff Walker and that, I don't know if you've seen him on YouTube, and he's making a living out of it. And I think he's running around that sort of 15th to 30th, like, which is how it should be.
I mean, for him, though, it's more combined. I think what he does to promote himself and the social media side of things makes up for... Because he's not making a lot of money in as far as winnings go.
Yeah, I think the Americans just have a bit more of a handle on that sort of stuff. Like, that's, yeah, they market themselves really well over there.
Like Joel Evans over here, he does a really good job of that.
Yeah, I think a few more people should do that myself.
Yeah, the opportunities are there. I'm amazed at how few actually take advantage of it. You know, you can get more support, even if it's not straight up financial. You can get more gear support, more bike support, more help getting to and at the races by putting yourself out there. And it makes people who are looking to further their own programs and their own brands want to support you. And I don't see a lot of young riders taking advantage of that.
No, I definitely think more people should. It'd be good to see more people do it, I suppose. But, yeah.
Oh, well. Well, no one's doing it. I guess it's an opportunity for some of you guys to get that leg up, I guess. Because at the end of the day, it's still a competition.
Yeah, I started my own little YouTube channel sort of to do that on the side. I only really did it because a bit of fun with me, mate. But, hey, fingers crossed, hopefully that takes off one day and make a living out of that. That'd be nice.
So you're going to, you know, do vlogs next year when you're travelling around doing the ProMX series?
Yeah, I'll vlog each one of them and sort of everything in between. I did Newcastle. I did one, and then sort of just the couple before that were just weekends where we went road and stuff like that.
And what's that called? What's
your YouTube channel? Meatball Films.
Meatball Films. Everyone get onto it. Give him a follow and a watch.
It'd be nice. It'd be nice.
I think there's a lot of interest in what you guys do. I don't want to say it too loudly because, you know, there'll be other people jumping on the bandwagon, which, jokes aside, I actually don't mind. I'd love to see you privateer guys get a lot more exposure, but as far as my podcasts go, my most downloaded ones are with the privateers, because I think people have a genuine interest in what you guys are doing and how you put it all together.
Well, that's the thing. You hear sort of the same old story with all of the all the factory guys, same thing. And every privateer has got a different story. There's never a same way that someone's getting to the track or anything like that. There's always something different.
And there's something, I think, about the underdog that people just love to get behind as well.
Yeah, well, there's something about it. I don't really know what it is, but people always seem to. I'm not complaining.
Yeah, especially in motocross, like with the rider support program, when I put the applications out for that, I was honestly prepared to not be able to scrape together 12 riders. I had photos for the calendar lined up and ready to go, just sort of stock photos that I could use to fill in months if I didn't get 12 riders. And
you got smashed with that, didn't you?
I ended up with about 30 to 35 riders apply. And the thing that actually blew me away even more so than that was just the amount of support I got from the motocross community and the industry as a whole. Like just the messages I got saying, you know, it's awesome. We need more of this, all that sort of stuff. Like I've been part of other sports and other communities that definitely aren't that supportive of, you know, the guys that are trying to have a crack and actually get a leg up. So for me, you know, that's one of the things I absolutely love about motocross and the motocross community. And with the calendars now, I've had so many sponsors actually put their hand up to get behind it.
No, I think what you're doing is awesome, like, and there needs to be more of it.
Hopefully it gets the ball rolling, you know. And I listen to a lot of podcasts and there was always people saying that, you know, nobody is interviewing privateers. So I thought, well, there's an opportunity. I want to hear more from and about privateers, so I'll start the podcast. And then once I was in it and talking to people in the industry, there was a lot of talk about, you know, all the things in motocross that we need to do to make it better. And I'm sick of just sort of hearing about it. I love to get involved and it's like, all right, so what can I do? You know, I definitely have limited financial means but I'm motivated and I'm passionate. So I think about what can I do and hopefully that just gets the ball rolling and gets other people doing the same thing.
Like everyone always says what needs change with this sport and stuff like that and it never happens, but you've actually put your hand up and done it, which is awesome.
Yeah, and look, I think there's other people out there doing it as well, but it's like you said, everyone knows what needs to happen. It's just a case of, of getting the job done. So,
yeah, there's a lot of big industry companies that could do some pretty cool stuff with privateers and they just don't seem to do it.
I think, hopefully, you know, I'm a bit of an optimist in that sense. You look in America at some of the profiles of the privateer riders, like big profile privateer riders, you know, they've all started to make a real name for themselves. You know, they're able to make a living and it's not necessarily based on their results. It's just off everything else surrounding that. And they do get the support of the industry. They get the sponsors. They get fill-in rides on factory teams occasionally, a lot of the time based on the profiles that they've been able to build. And because of that, you know, they're making a living out of the sport. And, you know, I'd love to see that happen in Australia a lot more.
Yeah, well, hopefully you've got the ball rolling and it starts heading in that direction with it all because it'd be awesome to see.
And you sort of touched on it before about the privateer thing. Like there's a lot of personalities in the privateer paddock that nobody knows about and nobody hears about. So I think
you get pushed in the back of the paddock and sort of it.
Yeah, I just don't think you're given the opportunities. You know, that's
no.
That's a bit that sort of frustrates me. It's without everyone that's from, you know, 5th to 40th at a pro national, the sport couldn't happen. And
no.
A lot of the time when you're watching it on TV, I think there was a real big step up in watching the coverage this year. It's for a start, it's awesome that it's back on TV. It's awesome that they're putting such an effort into promoting the sport on a national level. But the bits that pain me when I'm watching it is when the commentators, and for the most part, they do a great job, but they don't know anyone's names, you know, anyone that's not in the top five or the top 10. And that sort of stuff really frustrates me is because you guys are all putting it on the line. You've all made the effort to be there and you wouldn't have that in any other sport. Like you imagine the commentators were commentating the AFL and
they know everyone.
Yep. And they only knew five or 10 of the guys on the field.
And I feel like in America does a really good job for that.
Yeah, 100%.
If there's, even if they don't know it, for some, I don't know how they do it, but they find it out.
I mean, they've got the list in front of them, so it's just a case of being able to put it all together. But, you look at guys like, as much as they bag him out sometimes, like Ralf Schahin, he does the research pre-season and before each event, and he knows little things about the riders. Like, he does the homework. You know, it's not just about turning up on the day and being able to talk. He does the homework.
Yeah, which I think needs to be done more.
Yeah, and it's like, I definitely see our local coverage improving. It just needs to be better.
Oh, it's definitely getting better. Like, it's getting there.
Yeah.
Definitely not, I don't think it's on the level that it needs to be.
Yes.
But it is getting there. So you can't, as long as it's getting better, I'm happy.
And you sort of summed it up. It's it just needs to be better. And there's guys, like, I look at the live commentators, guys like Joe Stevens. Like, he's amazing, you know, but he for whatever reason, he's not in the booth. I'd love to see someone like him end up in the booth because, A, he can talk, but, B, he seems to know everyone's names, everyone's numbers, what's going on. Like, he's got his fingers on the pulse. So I'd love to see someone like that get a crack in the booth and just see how it goes.
As bad as it is to say, I think a lot of people just turn up for a payday and leave, which I don't think is the way to do it. End of the day, it's all we've got at the moment, so you've kind of got to take what you can get.
Yeah, and this year, like I said, it's been a massive improvement on what we've had in the past. So as long as that trajectory keeps going, it's 2024 is going to be an awesome year. So speaking of 2024, what's your plan for next year?
The plan is all of the Pro Nationals.
Yep.
I'd like to get the Supercross again, depending on what happens. I heard they were going to do more rounds.
Yeah, I think we've got four next year.
Yeah, if that happens, oh, I don't know.
Yep.
I don't know where they're going to be or that. And, yeah, whatever other races I can squeeze in and whatever other cool stuff I can do on my bike.
No, awesome.
As long as I'm on my bike, I'm happy.
Yeah. So you're going to do regional races and state races in between as well?
Yeah, if everything lines up, I'd like to do all the state titles. I'd like to get all the East Coast rounds done as well, but I think some of them may clash with the Nationals.
Do you set yourself goals in terms of results and what you expect of yourself at each of these sort of events? So, like, do you go to a state championship and have a goal in mind, or do you just turn up and are sort of happy to do the best you can?
I have more of a goal in mind now. I used to just sort of was happy to do the best I can, but now that I'm training more and stuff like that, I'm more like, no, you're putting in the work. Like, I want to see a result.
Yes.
But as long as I'm happy riding my bike, I'm happy.
Yeah.
I'd rather get 40th and be happy than get 20th and just be angry all the time. And like, and I know myself, I ride 100 times better when I'm just happy, walking around with a smile on my face, having a good time.
So is this something that you hopefully one day will make a career out of?
I would love to. In all honesty, do I think that will happen? Probably not. But I'm just going to run it as long as I can, run it till the wheels fall off and see what happens.
Would you move into another aspect of the industry if you couldn't ride? Is that something you'd be interested in?
What do you mean by that exactly?
Oh, like, would you want to stay in the industry? You know, if you couldn't ride or couldn't make a career out of it, would you, you know, look at getting into another part of it? So, you know, the organisation of racing or commentating or media or something else?
Yeah, it's something I could see myself doing, but I don't really think of much beyond racing. I think the most I thought about beyond racing was doing my trade, so I had something to fall back on if it all didn't work out.
So looking ahead to next year's Pro-MX then, what are your expectations in terms of results? You're just looking to qualify at each round? Would that be the starting point?
Yeah, I not so much thinking about that because in my head, like, I'm going to.
Yes.
I would like to just be in the mix with everyone, whether it be just in 30th, but in the mix with people. I like the racing part of it. I don't like just sitting there riding around doing nothing.
Yeah, 100%.
But, yeah, I'm happy. I'm happy with whatever as long as I'm in the mix with people. Get the first couple out of the road and then we'll see. I might shock myself. I might not. Who knows?
Yeah, well, that's down my neck of the woods, round one. So that's about 3 minutes from my house.
So I can that's actually, all right, at least.
Yeah, you can actually hear the track from my place. So it's
I think I'm about 14 hours. I think I'm about 12 to 14 hours. So.
True to form, I bet you the weather completely shits itself. At 1:30 round one.
To a point, I love when the weather goes shit and I hate when the weather goes shit because I love that it separates people, but at the same time, I've got to pay for all the parts that get destroyed in the mud. I love the rain and the mud, but when you're the one that's coming out of your pocket, it's not overly fun.
On that note, like looking back at Wodonga this year, I guess it was a topic of hot discussion between the privateers. There was quite a few that that pulled out for the reasons you've just highlighted, and a lot that actually decided to stick it out and blew up their bikes. If you turned up at a national like that, would you race?
If I had driven all the way there, yes. If I'd turned up and it was muddy in it, yeah, I would have rode. Probably would have blown my bike up. Probably would have been angry about it, but I would have done it. I'm pretty stubborn. If I'd driven all the way to Wodonga, I don't think I'd, I don't know if I'd pull the pin on it, especially at a pro national. Like, if it was just a club day, then yeah, I'm not risking a bike for a club day, but yeah, if it was a national, I think I'd do it.
So that begs the question, who does your mechanical work?
Myself. Myself until I can't do something, and then that's when Dad comes in.
Yeah, yeah. So how much can you actually do?
Oh, I can pretty much do it all now. There's not really anything I can't do. Normally I just give him the shit jobs like changing tyres or something like that.
So you'll do a top and bottom end rebuild if you have to?
I'll do a top on a four-stroke.
Yep.
I've never done a bottom on a four-stroke. I would give it an attempt and then just cross my fingers and my toes that it works. but I would give it an attempt. I've done top ends before.
Yes, yeah.
It doesn't really scare me, bike work.
It's amazing what you can learn on YouTube as well.
Yeah, I'm a pretty quick learner. I can sort of work it out. As long as I can see it come apart, I'm pretty good on putting it back together.
Yeah.
And I like being in the shed, and I don't mind putting some music on, just sitting in there pottering along.
Yeah, I'm exactly the same. It's good therapy.
Yeah, until something doesn't come loose and, and then it's not.
Yeah, you strip a bolt or the head snaps off a bolt.
Oh, and then you're just like, oh, come on, man. Yeah. Like, really?
Then you need therapy.
Yeah, I've learnt the older I get just to pull the pin then and just walk away.
Yep. My old man, like, he was an engineer, a mechanical engineer, and I'm a chippy by trade, and he always used to, shake his head when he saw me working on stuff when it wasn't going to plan, and because usually I'd keep pushing it until something broke. And I've learnt now, as I've gotten a bit older and wiser, that patience is definitely a virtue when it comes to mechanical work.
Yeah, normally when you force something, it goes the wrong way every time.
Yeah, and even if something breaks, like I walk away and I'll come back and try fix it later. Like if I'm in a rush or I try to get it done all at once, then that's when, you usually make the problem worse rather than fix it.
Yeah, yeah. Never, when you get to that point, it never makes it easier.
No. So for your, as far as your career goes, what's your career goal? Do you have plans to just keep racing the Pro MX for as long as you can and the Australian Supercross Championship, or would you love to get overseas or to the US at some point?
Well, that's sort of always the dream, isn't it, to go over there? I just want to do the Nationals and the Australian Supercross for a couple of years yet. And then I've got plans when I turn 21 to go live in the States for a year.
Oh, awesome.
Not so much for the racing. Like, I will race. I will take a bike and I will probably race more than I should. But, yeah, that's my plan. And then anyone wants to sponsor me a ride to Europe or something, I'd happily take it.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be a dream for a lot of racers.
Yeah. So, I just, goals per se, I just like to just still have fun racing my bike and
keep your options open.
Have some good finishes and stuff like that, and can't really go wrong on the bike.
Nah, 100%. Well, on that note, is there anyone that you would like to mention or to thank that supports your program?
Fox helps out a lot, and Link International, they help out with parts, takes a lot of weight off my shoulders. Promoto Suspension, they've been helping out for years now. Moto Kit, he actually made me have one of the, if not the best looking bike at Newcastle in my eyes. You help out now, which is awesome. And we've got the local bike shop out here, Mudgee Honda Centre, and kind of it. Well, your grandparents, it's about it.
Parents, grandparents, yeah, anyone that, I think it
all. Anyone with the last name Waters.
Yeah, no, I think it all helps. But look, I'm really looking forward to next year working with you and the other guys on the program. I think it's going to be awesome. And, above all, looking forward to having a lot of fun as well.
Yeah, no, it'll be awesome to work with you and some other guys and meet a few of the other blokes on the program. I've talked to a couple of them just on social media, and we're going to hopefully try and meet up for a ride and stuff like that. So it should be good.
Unreal. Unreal. Well, thanks heaps for coming on the podcast, mate. I really enjoyed our chat, and I look forward to doing it again.
No, thanks for having me on.
And that brings us almost to the end of this episode of Inside the Helmet with Jeremy Waters. Make sure you check out his YouTube channel, Meatball Films, and give him a like and subscribe while you're there. Thanks again to our partners for this episode, Death Grip Products, SPMX Suspension and Engine Performance, Graphics by Aqua, Shred Bike Care, Wolf Building Compliance, Works Racing, Iro, Five Gloves, and Bolt Everywhere Premium Racewear. This has been episode 19 of the Mental for Moto podcast, and I've been your host, Pete Wolf. Until next time, see ya.